From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
One of my favorite books by our friend Ken Drews is called Making More Plants. And though it's about all kinds of propagation, today Ken's here to talk about what is maybe the easiest way of all to make more plants, which is by dividing them. More on that in a moment, but first this message.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
In most of the country this spring 2020, we're not out shopping at garden centers, browsing for new adoptees the way we usually would be. But maybe you, like Ken Drews and me, are ready to do some shopping in your own garden, looking for divisions of favorite things that would work elsewhere, or simply keeping that bee balm from overrunning everything else that shares the same bed with it. So back today to talk about dividing plants, the how, the when, the why, is Ken. Welcome, Ken. Hi.
Hi, Margaret. Yes. It's very sweet of you to recommend that old book, which is still available.
Yeah, no, it's a good one because it's technically expert, but not daunting, I guess, is the thing that I thought about it. It makes me feel like you're there with me and you're encouraging me, you know, it's that voice. So, yeah.
Good.
So, do you remember the first plant you divided, Ken? I think mine was Siberian iris.
Thinking back, I kind of remember a European ginger in the old Brooklyn garden.
Oh, yeah.
I want to hear about your iris, too.
Well, yeah, I had made the garden when my mother was ill years ago, like we talked about last time, and I was in my 20s. I was just starting gardening. One of the things I planted was Siberian iris, and then it was time. Eventually, when she was too ill to stay home, it was time to sell the house and move on, and I bought the house I'm in now eventually, and I moved some of the plants from my first garden there at her house to here. And so I had to dig up this Siberian iris and take some of it with me, you know, and that was interesting because it's a quite tough cookie underground. You know, it's not some gentle little thing. You just said European ginger, which isn't like a rock underground.
No.
So, yeah. So that was the idea. And I looked in all the books, you know, and it said, oh, the center part may fade out. So you want to get rid of the center part and you want to keep wedges from sort of the ring around the dying off center part. And oh, my goodness. So that was an education for me, my first experience with dividing.
Did you have a chainsaw?
I didn't know about chainsaws then. I was a city girl. Yeah.
Well, I remember the ginger because I don't know if you've ever done this, but you buy a gallon container of European ginger, which is a beautiful evergreen plant, and you want it to be a ground cover, and you plop it in the ground, and it's beautiful, but nothing happens. It doesn't get any bigger year after year after year.
It stays in this congested little shape of the pot that it used to be in. Yep, yep.
So I remember unearthing it and prying it apart, which was incredibly easy. It almost falls apart.
Yes.
And then planting each piece individually about 6 inches apart. And each piece became as big as the original. So that's one plant that I learned, divide that plant. Because just as we were saying, it stays in that little clump unless you intervene.
Well, I think a lot of those little woodland ground covery things that grow in the shade, I think they adapt to growing among the roots of trees and shrubs, but to be put in a, and they can go sideways gradually and so forth, but to be put in a plastic pot, you know what I mean? And it can't go anywhere. And I just think it sort of grows together in this mat that's quite unlike what it does in its natural habitat, you know. Mm. And I've seen a lot of other little woodlanders. Speaking of woodlanders, I mean, and that's a non-native thing, Asarum europaeum, the European ginger you were just talking about, and has shiny leaves, kind of, what would you say, heart or kidney shaped? I don't know.
which organ? Kidney maybe?
Yeah, kidney shaped evergreen leaves. But speaking of a native one, you and I learned how to divide a native ground cover of the woodland. We learned it together, and we've talked about it on the show before. You know I'm talking about Trillium, right?
it's a miracle.
You're right.
It's so intuitive. I don't know. We're giving it as advice, even though it doesn't make any sense. But we were told that from somebody who had 1,000 trillion that she divided her plants when they were in flower. And I can see the reason to do that because you can see them because they're ephemerals and they disappear when in the fall when you'd like to or think about dividing them. But she divided them in flower, and so I did too, and it works.
Right, right. So we would dig up while they're in flower, when you can see them, you'd kind of dig up this little creature. And if it's been growing for a while and there's multiple stems, there'll be sort of these little knobby rhizomes, I guess, at the bottom of each stem, yes? Kind of tease those apart.
Well, I think with trillium, you kind of cut them apart because it's got like a little gnarly finger-shaped thing with mm-hmm. a couple of points, which are the growing eyes. And you can snap them apart or cut them apart and plant each part. And then you have to, actually with almost everything, you have to water. And you have to keep up with watering unless there's plenty of rain. But you want those plants to be well established. And you can't just plant them and forget them, even though they're native plants. They need attention for the first year.
Right. So let's backtrack for a minute. Dividing. So we're talking about perennials so far. And perennials doesn't mean permanent. You know, just because you plant something that's a perennial doesn't mean you never have to do anything with it or lift it out of the ground again. Although there are some cases where that's true, like peonies, unless you want more of a particular one, you could probably leave them there for 50 years and they'll just keep doing their thing, right? Mm-hmm. But a lot of them do need some division. So it's kind of like, what are some of the reasons you would divide? And one was what you observed with that ginger. It wasn't going anywhere on its own, and you were looking for it to sort of move around, you know?
Yeah, I wanted a ground cover in a, not just one little round clump.
Right. And so other reasons might be, I love what it's doing over here with given plant, like we're talking about with the trilliums. I want to make another group of trilliums over there, right? So it might be to have more somewhere else, as I call it in the intro, shopping in your own garden, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or making it for a friend, mm-hmm. because
right.
it's one of the wonderful things about having plants is, unlike some treasures, you can share them.
Right. Right. So it might be to move it around. It might be to make it behave in a different way. I mentioned also in the intro, like the bee balm, the Monarda, some of these things, if you don't divide them, keep them within a given territory, they'll just run through a whole bed and overtake their neighbors. So that's another reason to be have a tough hand with certain mm-hmm. plants, right?
Mm-hmm.
And take off pieces from sort of their perimeter.
What do you do with the pieces?
Well,
Margaret.
You're supposed to not necessarily look for a place for them unless you really no. have a place for them. You're supposed to compost them, but whatever. Yeah. And so other reasons to divide, something's getting, I mentioned the Siberian iris at the beginning, and some things get like that. It becomes like a donut, like the center of the donut is empty, mm-hmm. an old Siberian iris, and you have this ring around the outside that's still
for
flowering.
Rejuvenation.
Yeah, exactly. So then, okay, so those are some reasons, but then like the when and how also varies, and it can be from, you need to divide them every year, like perennial mums, which a lot of people don't even know there are perennial chrysanthemums, but there are. You have to divide them every year for them to really perform well. But some things, like I said, with the peonies, not so much. You don't want to disturb them because you'll interrupt the flowering cycle. So what are some of the things that you divide a lot, a little, or are you on a campaign right now since we're homebound? Are you doing a lot more dividing than usual?
Well, I actually did some ginger, just like we were talking about, some European ginger, because
yeah.
the American one is just fine moving around by itself. But it's interesting that you mentioned chrysanthemum, because probably a lot of people have bought chrysanthemums in the fall at the gas station or something, and you plant them and they don't come back in the spring.
No.
Because they, unlike a lot of things, they don't want to be fall planted. They want to be spring planted.
Yeah.
But they're usually not available in the spring. So if you have some growing that you once bought in the spring, that's important to do that in the spring. to do that division in the spring and not disturb them in the fall, because they're, for us, because they're not incredibly hardy in zones, let's say, for example, 6, 5, 4. They might live, but they don't want to be disturbed.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. That's one thing. You mentioned iris and Monarda. You're mentioning good plants to divide. I haven't thought about it. But, you know, you're talking about rejuvenation and good health and things like that, but I always think about making more plants, and the biggest reason for me to divide plants, as you said, is to have more of them.
Right.
And I remember dividing, you can call it dividing, lilac shrubs. Sometimes
yeah.
Lilacs will have, you know, they often have water sprouts, or they have some shoot that comes up, even it can come up in the path. And that's an opportunity to get another plant and maybe talk a friend into giving you another plant. years ago, I got a wonderful semi-double white lilac from our dear friend, the late John Trexler.
Mm.
And in the winter with snow, I had a spade and I dug straight down because I figured it had a runner, and it did. And I lifted that plant and wrapped it in moist newspaper in Massachusetts and drove it to actually to the new garden in New Jersey, which that's 20 something years ago.
Hmm.
But that's important. Sorry to interrupt myself.
No, not at all, because you're absolutely right. I have a mock orange, a gold leafed mock orange, you know, an old fashioned shrub. It's a kind of messy thing. It needs to be cleaned up. It gets twiggy and nasty, but you know, it still has that incredible, those white flowers that are so fragrant in the spring. And this is a gold leaf one. So it looks nice all the time during the season. And that'll sort of send off like babies to the side, you know, and you can kind of dig one out that's...
And send it to me.
And send it to you. Okay. I will. And hydrangeas sometimes. Have you had that happen with hydrangeas? Like that they sort of, like a little piece might lie down and layer, or certain things will like it'll root. Certain things will root. I've just had things sort of next to mom, you know, next to the parent plant that I think have right. kind of rooted.
And sometimes you can do that. You can make that happen.
Yeah. Making more plants. So you mean bend down
a branch if it's close to the ground, let's say like a hydrangea quercifolia, the oak leaf mm-hmm. hydrangea, and you damage it a little bit, either by pushing it down pretty hard or cutting it, nicking it with a knife, and put that part a little bit under the soil and put a rock on it.
Right.
And then forget about it for 2 years and come uh-huh. back and cut it off, and you've got a whole new shrub for another place or to give to someone because you love it.
So layering as a way to make more plants and then divide it off from the parent plant.
If you picture something, if you've ever grown a strawberry, you know, an edible strawberry, they send out right. these runners that start new plants. And so you're dividing in a way, but you're just cutting off the runner and the new plant and moving it and having a fresh new plant that's going to bear fruit even more.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the when. You were talking about I mentioned the mums, and you were talking about the mums, and, you know, the when.
Mm-hmm.
So give me some examples of like how you figure out if it's time. You just said you were moving the ginger. We both said we move trilliums when they're in flower. Not that you can't do it at another time.
Right.
But yeah. So what are some other when concerns?
Well, as a kind of general rule, I guess, if you've got a plant that blooms early in the spring, like a lungwort, like pulmonaria,
right.
then you want to move that either before it comes up or when it's just starting to show. So those early flowering things, you got to move them early. And it's too late for a lot of them. I mean, you can move them, but if you really want the greatest success and flowering and vigor, you want to do them early. But things that bloom later, like garden phlox, they're probably just coming up, and you can move them now or for the next few weeks because they're summer blooming. So that's my general rule. If it's early blooming, move it early or in the fall, if it's a very hardy plant. And for summer blooming things, you can move them in the fall too, but you can also move them a little bit later. And I've moved some plants or divided some plants that were already 18 inches tall, the Korean aster calamaris. And I cut them in half and then dug them. It's a very vigorous plant, and moved that. And the hostas are just showing the points of the hostas. So they have to be moved when those points are about, oh, just coming up between half inch or and an inch before they start to turn into leaves. I'd have a serrated knife that's dedicated to the garden and not to the kitchen. And I cut in between the eyes or those points. And sometimes I'll cut right in the ground while they're still in the ground and then take a spade and lift part of the clump and move it to another place. As I'm saying all these things, I'm thinking all these opportunities for symmetry, you know, to move
right.
half of the plant across the path and have two plants that are paired to introduce the path. Sounds good.
So you just mentioned serrated knife. I have my former bread knife from many years ago is in my garden bucket, you know, my tool bucket. Mm-hmm. So definitely a must tool. And you don't need a fancy thing that you buy special. I mean, literally, it can be an old serrated knife and for cutting up some of these root systems. Now, and you just mentioned various things, you know, the lungworts, the pulmonarias, and so forth, when to move them. Or in the hostas, for instance. Now, it doesn't mean if people, because some, I have a friend who says, you know, when's a good time to do something? When you have time, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes we get too busy and we miss the chance of the ideal time. It doesn't mean you'd kill a hosta if you lifted it and cut it up in leaf. It will look messy this season. Do you know what I mean? Or it doesn't mean that you'll kill the pulmonary,
yeah,
just so people don't worry. It won't kill it if you move it after it flowers, probably. But do you know what I mean? It's not ideal, but it's sometimes it's the only time, and we understand that. We're not saying or else in most of these cases.
Well, as
right?
you're saying that, sometimes you're in a place where you have to rescue a plant for some
right.
reason.
Exactly.
And you just have to do it when you can do it.
Yes.
But if I'm digging or dividing a plant at the not perfect time, for example, in the summer when it's hot, but it has to be done, I always think how much of the roots am I losing? And then I try to trim the plant on top to be equal to the amount of root loss. You know, to compensate for the root mm-hmm. loss, I'll reduce the foliage loss. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll make a foliage loss otherwise it's going to wilt. And it's going to take so long to recover if it even lives. But if you cut the plant back and sort of equal the root loss, the giant disturbance, then you have a much better chance. And again, water, water, water.
Right. So there are some things, like I was thinking of another one of my early escapades. Early on, I had tried to grow bearded iris. And unlike the Siberian iris, so they have a very different root structure. They're like those fleshy rhizomes, and they're almost above the surface kind of looking. And I mean, people probably know what I'm talking about. And those are one where I wouldn't move them at any old time. I'd probably do that in like July, August after they mm-hmm. were done flowering. Does that make sense to you?
That's exactly correct.
Yeah. And just because that fleshy thing and it's going through this big, anyway, it puts a lot of energy into getting ready to do its flowering thing. And yeah, I'd wait till it was done with that.
So they're semi-dormant. So that's another time, just like in the fall for hardy plants. And with iris, you do want to move them when they have a little quiet moment in mid to late summer. And then sometimes they put on a little more growth in the late summer. So you do want to do it when they're quiet. And with bearded iris, you have to divide them.
Yeah.
Not every year, probably every second or third year.
Yeah.
They take a little while to reestablish, but they need to be rejuvenated. They need it. Some plants do.
Right. So that also brings up, you know, visualizing those also brings up the fact that when we go to lift a plant, the other day I was cleaning up a bed and I lifted a little bit of the Japanese forest grass, Hakonokloa macra. I have the all gold type, nice semi-shade, low, graceful grass, ground covery kind of thing. And I mean, the root system of that looks like, I don't know, someone stuck their finger in an electric socket or something. It's like boing, you know, it's this crazy wiry, woody, but like you can't really tell where the crown is, you know, the center. Do you know what I mean? It's just kind of a crazy looking thing. I should take a picture of a piece to accompany the transcript of the show. But, and you talked about how you could just kind of with your fingers tease apart those European gingers once you lifted it, and that was easy. now we just talked about the bearded iris and we can lift those, but some things are kind of like a big, thick mass, and other things are like fleshy, like daylilies underground. And you know what I mean? It's, do you have like an approach for what you do when you then see the root structure of something? We said knife in some cases.
Knife, yeah. And you know, so many books show back-to-back garden forks.
Right.
And you stick it in and pry them apart. And I always found, for example, with Siberian iris, you just damage so much of it doing it that way.
Right.
In general, I don't do that. I'll dig up the entire clump with soil and then get my serrated knife again, especially in the case of something like Canacloa. You can't generalize for all grasses, except, sorry, I'll interrupt myself. One thing about all of those Asian grasses is they're kind of late season things. So the timing is important. And that would be something you might divide now, because they're really just getting started.
Yes.
And some of those big grasses, you need a backhoe to divide them
when they get old. Many years ago, I was given by the person who used to be in charge of the gardens at Rockefeller Center, the so-called Channel Gardens, Dave Murbach. Mm-hmm. You remember Dave, of course. Sure. And one time he told me, he said, "You have a pickup truck, don't you, Margaret?" This is when I worked in Manhattan. This is 25 plus years ago. And I said, "Yes, I do." And he said, "Well, we're getting rid of the grass garden installation. If you want some divisions," he used the word divisions, "of some grasses, you know, you could take some clumps." And I'm thinking, oh, how sweet, you know, when I'm leaving Friday for upstate. Well, the guys were there at the door, at the driveway of Rockefeller Center. They were there with like 40,000 tons of, you know, these giant clumps, because to take them out of the ground, like you need, like you say, heavy equipment, because they're really woody underground.
Right.
So in the last few minutes, any other, you know, we have maybe 3 minutes, any other sort of tips, things you're encountering that you want to make sure to share or whatever about division?
Well, you know what hens and chicks are, or hen and chicks.
Yes.
Semper vivums.
Yes.
They're succulents and they look kind of like echeveria. They're rosettes and they're called hen and chicks because there's a main plant, and surrounding the main plant are little baby plants.
Yeah.
And you can just divide those by just pulling them off and planting them individually. So that's almost a self-dividing plant, wouldn't you
right.
say?
Right. It sends off the baby a little bit distance away. Yeah. 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 And you could take advantage of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever I talk to you, I get so excited, and then I run out to the garden and start doing it. So I'm going to get my knife and head out there and make more plants.
Yeah, and I just think, again, when you make more plants, if you're not going to compost them, if you're going to want to reuse them, maybe before you dig up 100 things and have a tarp full of creatures that are uprooted, think about where they're going to go, right? Because that's my thing, is I'll get really excited and I'll start, oh, I'm going to, you know, divide this and I'm going to take off a piece of this because it's going too far to the left or to the, and then suddenly I have this tarp full of goodies, but I haven't thought through what I'm going to do next. And, you know, they don't love to be out of the ground. Sometimes I'll just heel them in an empty vegetable bed, you know what I mean? And water them in and keep them mm-hmm. in better condition until I can use them later on. But making a plan, I think, right, is not a bad idea.
Right. So know where you're going to put them, even if you're going to put them in a pot to give to a friend.
Right.
Keep those roots out of sunlight.
Yes.
And maybe cover them with burlap or
yes.
moist right. newspaper or something.
Yes.
And put them in the shade while you're transporting them. And then when you plant them, water and keep your eye on it and water them well, because you want to help them get established.
So Ken, maybe we'll have a giveaway with the transcript of the show for Making More Plants, your propagation book that I love so much. And it's good, as always, to speak to you. I miss you. I know. I miss you. So anyway, we'll talk about that off the air.
I'm always here for you.
Okay. All right. Talk to you soon.
Be safe.
You too.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States, with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com.
And talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode of the show. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com. awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.